Start recording. In my spotlight, the video for the recording. You can go back, of course, to gallery view. And I'm going to share screen. All right. We are up to the next part of the story, which is we've been spent a couple of shiurim on the first part of Perek Tet Zayin, which was David's okay. Just got a note from Eugene that they're having technical difficulties. They'll be joining us hopefully soon. They had the first part of the Perek dealt with the story of David's encounter with Tziva and the conversation about Mephibosheth and his proclamation. He believes Tziva's accusation against Mephibosheth, that Mephibosheth has committed some kind of treason related to siding with, if not only siding with the rebellion, which is in itself treasonous, but even advocating for the restoration of Malchut Beit Sha'ul, which would be even more so. And so he takes all that land that he had given to him from the house of Sha'ul, takes it away, gives it to Tziva, and we talked a little bit about what is driving David's mistake, and it is a tragic mistake. What is driving David's mistake at this moment? And oh, there we go. They are. Calgary has arrived. It's good to see you. Okay.
Recording in progress, yes.
Okay. So we are up to Pasuk. Hey, I'm just going to temporarily put everybody on mute. You feel free to unmute yourselves. Okay. Uva HaMelech David ad Bachurim. From here, David is continuing the journey. I think we talked a little bit about the map and where he's headed. He's going from, he left Yerushalayim, he headed up to Har HaZeitim, and then from there headed kind of in a northeast trajectory, heading eventually towards the Jordan River, and he'll cross it. But before he gets there, he enters into the territory of Shevet Binyamin. Everything Binyamin is north. Everything north of Yerushalayim is Binyamin until you reach Beit El. Beit El is the border between Yerushalayim, between the tribe of Binyamin and the tribe of Ephraim. So if you from Yerushalayim to Beit El, if you can envision the geography, is Shevet Binyamin, and that's where David now enters into the territory of Binyamin. V'hineh misham ish yotze mimishpachat Beit Sha'ul. And out pops a man from the house of Sha'ul, relation of Sha'ul. Unclear who this, how this relation comes about, whether he's a cousin or a grandnephew or a great grandnephew. It's un we never. We don't really have that information, but we know that he is sees himself as part of the broader family of Sha'ul. Ushmo Shimi ben Gera. His name, Shimi ben Gera, Yotzei Yatzom Kalel. He comes out of the gate cursing. He is cursing David. David. Not only is he cursing David, but he's throwing stones at David. That's, sorry, I'm just going to put my phone on Do Not Disturb because it needs to be. Okay. David. He begins to throw stones at David and all of the servants of David. The people and all of the warriors, the people who are with David, the officers of David, the army, miminom mismalo, everybody on his right and on his left. We'll see in a moment that Shimei is kind of on like a hill, so he's sort of looking down at David and throwing stones at David in the valley. Bekalalo, and this was Shimei's declaration as he began to curse David. Say, say, ish hadamim vi ish hablial. Be gone, you man of blood, you wicked man. Hashiva lecha Hashem et kol dmei Beit Shaul. God has repaid upon you the blood of the house of Shaul, asher malachta tachtav, in whose place you reigned, on his throne you, to change the language a little bit, you usurped. God has paid you back all the blood of the house of Shaul. Vayiten Hashem et hamelucha biyad Avshalom benecha. And as punishment, God has taken this kingdom from you and has given it to your son Avshalom. V'inecha b'ra'atecha. You are caught by your own evil. Yish damim ata. For you are a man of blood. And that's the curse. And that's Shimi's proclamation. In any other context, this would be high treason to say such a thing against the king and to throw stones at the king. But of course, David is leaving Yerushalayim and therefore leaving the kingdom behind. But nonetheless, his people all saw him as the king. So, Vayomer Avishai ben Tzruya LaMelech, Avishai ben Tzruya, whom we know, we've encountered, we know who Avishai is. Right, we have the two sons of Tzruya, Avishai and Yoav. There was the third very early in the story, who was killed in the battle with Abner in the war against Ishbosheth. Vayomer Avishai ben Tzruya el Hamelech. Avishai says to the king, "Lama yikalel hakelav emet hazeh? Why should this dead dog be allowed to curse my king?" Let me go over there. I'll take his head off. One fell swoop. Won't take me much. I will be off with his head. What am I to do with you, sons of Tzruya? Let him curse. God has so given him this sanction, this permission, as if to say to him, curse David. Who should then say to God, why have you done so? He has the sanction of God. David then expands his conversation, not just with Avishai, but with the broader canvas of Avishai and all of his servants, all of his men. As Shimi is standing at the top of the hill, throwing stones and cursing. My own son came forth from my own loins, who has come to seek my life, to destroy, who comes to Yerushalayim to kill me. And now this Benjaminite? Anicholo, leave him alone. Let him curse. He has God's permission, God's sanction. Maybe God will see my eyes, my iniquity, my perspective, my transgression, avoni, my pain, my inui. All of those translations are legitimate within the context of both the written word here and the way it is pronounced. And Mefarshim is kind of confused by this Stephen Creo. It's written one way and writ and pronounced another, but all variations of the same idea, that God will see this context in which Shimi is cursing me and see it in my favor. And he will repay me good for allowing this person to curse me and for me tolerating it. Okay, so that should be my schus. So they continue their journey. David and his men continue along the path. Shimi was going along the hill across from him on that sort of upper hill. Haloch vayikalel. Going and cursing, vayisakel b'avanim, and throwing stones as he went, lumato, v'ipar b'afar, and throwing dust and dirt at him. And so this is the scene. As David is leaving Yerushalayim, David and Yoav and the army and the Tzva Giborim and all the people, and all the people who came with him, and Itagiti and all their families from Gat. And there is Shimei ben Gera cursing David, "You man of blood, you evil, worthless man, be gone," throwing stones at him. And David saying, "Say nothing, do nothing. We're just going to lower our heads, take it all, and walk." And that's the scene. And more or less, that's where it leaves us, because the next pasuk, the king and all of his people continue along a certain journey, and they to Bachurim, and there they refresh themselves, and then Avshalom b'chol ha'am ish Yisrael ba'u Yerushalayim. And in the meantime, Avshalom arrives in Yerushalayim. So the scene kind of has David, if you kind of look back from the two pictures painted at the same moment, David is walking towards Bachurim and Shebet Binyamin, being cursed by the people of Binyamin, cursed and stones being thrown at him, cursed for the blood on his hands in the house of Shaul. And here is Avshalom arriving in Yerushalayim. A very dramatic contrast in these two scenes. Okay. There's a couple of things we need. There's a lot to unpack in the story of Shimei ben Gera. And this is really the story of Shimei ben Gera will come back to us in several iterations. This is the first. This is the first time we're introduced to him, and to this treason of his, to stand on the hilltop and curse David and proclaim at David that say Isha Blial, go, you be gone, you man of blood, you worthless man. God has paid you back for all of the blood of the house of Shaul. And we'll talk about that phrase in a moment. This is the first time we encounter him. We will encounter Shimei ben Gera again as David returns to Yerushalayim in chapter 19. And then we will again encounter him in the beginning of Sefer Melachim. Please God, we should get to Sefer Melachim. Because that is the continuation. Is one of the tasks that David leaves for Shlomo is to address the treasonous behavior of Shimei ben Gera. So we will explore that as well. David is entering into the tribal territory of Shevet Binyamin, and there's a lot of Binyamin in this story. And I think it's important before we get into the details of it to recognize that there's a lot here in the background of the fact that we're dealing with a very old tension between Shevet Binyamin in particular and David. It's not an accident that this is taking place in the tribal territory of Binyamin. The identification of Shimei ben Gera, A, is from the house of Shaul. And that certainly tells you that we're dealing with Shevet Binyamin. We see later on, David refers to him as Va'afki Ata Ben Hayimini. So Ben Hayimini, just understand the grammar, is the biblical way of saying somebody from the tribe of Binyamin. It's not describing him as right-handed, but from the tribe of Binyamin. Binyamin is a hyphenated name, Ben-Yamin. So in the context of biblical Hebrew, if you were to put the definitive article, Hayyadiyah, on that name, Ben-Yamin, you would say Ha-Binyamini, which is kind of awkward. So biblical Hebrew will sometimes put the Hay in the middle, Ben Hayimini. And it's kind of a, it throws us off a little bit, but nonetheless, that's what it means here, right? Ben Hayimini, meaning somebody from the tribe of Binyamin. Sometimes somebody from the tribe of Binyamin is just referred to as Yimini, like Mordechai. Mordechai is described as Ishi Udiya B'Shishan Abirah Shmo Mordechai Ben Yehim Ben Shimi Ben Kish Ish Yimini. Yishimini means he's from the tribe of Binyamin. So that is the reference. So number one, he's physically in the tribal territory of Binyamin. He's from the house of Shaul, and David refers to him as Ben Hayimini. Even his name, Shimei ben Gera, is we don't have any information about this particular individual, who he's from, what family, what line, etc., other than from the fact that he's related to Shaul. But the name Shimi ben Gera are two names that should kind of just jump at us as saying, as crying out, this is Shevet Binyamin. So, for example, Shimi is a classic, one of the sons of Binyamin, but also a very famous individual who came from the house of Binyamin by the name of Shimi, and I just read his name a second ago. The lineage of Mordechai from Megillat Esther is Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. Kish is Shaul's father, Shaul ben Kish. So we don't know if this is the same Shimi. We're kind of beginning and the end of Mordechai's lineage as ben Shimi ben Kish, in which case Shimi would be a first cousin to Shaul, or it's a different generation. But Shimi is certainly a name from Shevet Binyamin. And Gera is also a name from Shevet Binyamin. Anybody know who famously was connected to the name Gera from Shevet Binyamin? Give you a clue. Ben Gera. Right? Blank Ben Gera from Shevet Binyamin. No. So one of the tribes, when we studied Sefer Shoftim, we looked at the fact that there are different tribes from different leaders of different tribes, or different Shoftim from different tribes throughout the book. And one of the early Shoftim was an individual from Shevet Binyamin by the name of Ehud ben Gera. Ehud ben Gera from the tribe of Binyamin. So Ben Gera is Ehud ben Gera is from Binyamin, Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish from Shevet Binyamin, Shmom Shimi ben Gera mi-mishpachat bet Shaul from the house of Shaul, David calls him ben Yimini. The fact that this is all happening in the tribal region of Shevet Binyamin is not an accident. I'm just going to stop sharing for 1 second. It's not an accident. Binyamin here plays a very critical role. I'm not sure this story would have happened if David's trajectory had taken him through the territory of the tribe of Shimon, or the tribe of Zvulun or Naphtali, or even Ephraim and Manasseh. I think the fact that his trajectory takes him through Shevet Binyamin is both telling and very tragic for David, because all of the conflicts that David has experienced up until this point in his lifetime, starting with Shaul, was not just between two individuals, Shaul and David, but also between the tribes that defined themselves loyal to David and the tribe that defined itself loyal to Shaul, namely Binyamin. The rift in the people, the civil war that engulfed Israel during the early years of David, when after Shaul's death, when Shaul was throne was taken by Ishbosheth, and Avner ben Ner and Ishbosheth led the war against David, that war was between the tribe of Yehuda and the tribes of Israel represented by Binyamin. The fact that Shaul was from Binyamin meant that all of that time that David was running from Shaul, he was running from a leader who identified himself as a leader from the tribe of Binyamin. It's not an accident. Shaul's choice of being king of Israel, and dafka the fact that Shaul is from Shevet Binyamin, as the first king of Israel in the aftermath of Sefer Shoftim, is extraordinary for Shevet Binyamin, because of all the tribes of Israel, Binyamin kind of gets the rough edge, the mistreatment, if you will. If you go to the end of Sefer Shoftim, the last story in the book of Shoftim is the story of Pilegesh Begiva. That's a horrific story, and we've read it through and learned about it and talked about it. I'm not going to review it in detail here, but except for one piece of it, which is that it ends with a terrible civil war that nearly eradicates one entire tribe of Israel. Which tribe? Binyamin. And they have to figure out a way. There's an oath taken against marriage into the house of Binyamin because of their behavior in that story. Right? The story of Sefer Shoftim ends with the near eradication of an entire tribe. The fact that literally one half a book later, several chapters later, when they're looking for the first king of Israel and the choice of the first king is from Shevet Binyamin, Shaul to Shevet Binyamin was the redeemer. He was bigger than Mashiach. He was the first king of Israel was from Shevet Binyamin. It's extraordinary. And David and Shaul always saw himself from the tribe of Binyamin and kind of a preferential treatment to the tribe of Binyamin. When Shaul was chasing after David, and he finds out that David is being hidden and being protected, etc., and he turns and nobody's telling Shaul where David is, he turns to his people. I think we read this psukim a couple of weeks ago, and he says to them from the tribe of Binyamin, he says, "Do you think David is going to favor you the way I favor you? You think he's going to give you the status that I, as a member of your tribe, give you?" Meaning, it was expected, it was understood that in the context of leadership, you kind of did, you brought in your own people from Shevet Binyamin. And all that's going to disappear when David becomes king, so says Shaul to his people. As a way of threatening them. That was just before he goes and attacks the city of Nov. The fact that up until this time, really, literally, for hundreds of years, we have lived with a tribal leadership model, where the leaders of Israel are chosen by tribe. And now suddenly we have a leader who's identified as a king over the whole people. You know, that's supposed to be a transition into a more national kind of leadership. But Shaul never saw himself in that regard. Shaul always ever saw himself as a leader from the tribe of Binyamin. And for Shaul, it was tragic. When David comes to, I'm going to go back to sharing for a second. When David comes back to the kingdom, and let's just shift for one second to... Here, this is the pasuk I was just referring to. Shaul heard that David was hidden, and that he and his people were sitting in wherever they were, being protected, being hidden, and it was in the area of Ramah, and after by the city of Nov, and the people of Binyamin were harboring him, were protecting him. So Vayomer Shaul la'avadav anitzavim alav. Shaul turned to his servants who stood with him and said to them, Shimuna b'nei yemini. Listen here, you Binyaminites, Benjaminites, right? He's talking to his own people, but they're all from Shevet Binyamin. Gam l'kulchem yiten ben Yishai sadot u'kramim l'kulchem yasim sarei alavim v'sarei meot. You think that Ben Yishai will give you fields and vineyards and make you captains of his armies? You think that you will have a fair shot in the tribe of, in the kingdom of David, kikshartem kulchem alai, that you have conspired against me and not tell me where David is? Right. But he specifically surrounded himself with people from Bnei Yemini, right? From Binyamin. That was classic at that time. David was unique. Because with David, the moment the war with Ishbosheth ends, and they come to David and they say to David, and it's Dafka, all of the tribes of Israel, Kol Shiftei Israel, come to David and Hebron and say to David, you have been our true leader, you are our true king, you have led us throughout this period of time. Let's make a brit, let's unite the kingdom, let's become one kingdom, let's become one Malchus. David, the first thing he does, which is really quite extraordinary, is he takes his capital and he moves it from Shevet Yehuda, he moves it from Hebron to Yerushalayim. And understand the significance of that move is that it's a direct blow to the people of Hebron and the people of his own tribe. He's chosen to make the capital of Israel a city that, that borders between the two warring tribes of Israel, Judah and Benjamin, as a way to unite the kingdom together. We talked about this a little bit when we talked about David's decision to send the Oren back to Yerushalayim. So David always saw, and that's the tragedy in the story, David always saw himself as a national leader, of raising the banner of one leader for all the tribes of Israel, not just Judah and not just Benjamin, but all the tribes of Israel. And unlike his predecessor, Shaul, who saw himself specifically from the tribe of Benjamin, and Benjamin, who had felt they kind of finally got their kind of piece of power, if you will, from all the years of being the short end of the stick, especially in Sefer Shoftim, and here comes along the opportunity for David, as David is leaving Yerushalayim and David is being exiled from Yerushalayim, comes along Shimon ben Gera, and you feel the angst and the pain and the baggage that he carries, which is far more than just a moment of I'm going to side with Avshalom over David. This is, he's carrying with him all the baggage of the tribe of Benjamin. And that's really what I wanted to point out in this passage, that he's really carrying with him all the baggage of the tribe of Benjamin. Not only the house of Shaul, but the fact that Shaul was a leader, first king of Israel, chosen from the house of Benjamin, a source of pride for the Shevet, and comes along this upstart, David, and takes it away from him, and David is from Yehuda. And so all of that pain comes crashing down in this curse. Shimon ben Gera proclaims, Yatzei Yatzon Mekalel, he curses David, and he says, Tzei Tzei Isha Damim V'Isha Blial. So I share this with you as background because one of the questions that we're going to address in the next piece is the veracity of this claim. Is David guilty of the blood of the house of Shaul? That's really quite an extraordinary accusation, that David is guilty and God is paying David back for the murder of the house of the, for the blood of the house of Shaul. And we'll see who is, if he's referring to anything specific or not, we'll talk about in a moment. But that is really an extraordinary accusation, if it's true. And so what I'm suggesting is that even if it's not true, and we'll talk about it in a second, even if it's not true, driving Shimi ben Gera is a kind of energy around the pain of all those years of David's reign means, the symbol of David means that our king, our leader, our representative, our Shaul, our moment in the sun was taken away by this upstart from Shevet Yehuda. Everything always goes to Yehuda. All the kings come from Yehuda. Everything always goes to Yehuda. We don't have anything. We nearly were destroyed in the story of Pelegish Megiva and not too long ago. And now suddenly we have our claim, our moment in the sun. And who takes it away from us? They don't blame Shmuel and they don't blame Shaul. Right? Who takes it away from us? They blame David. So this is part of the reason why not only is his accusation so hurtful, but he has a following. We have to realize that he's not alone up there in the hill. If he's throwing stones at the entire army and all of the people, he's throwing, cursing and throwing stones at the people, miyaminam umismalam, on right and to the left. As it says a little bit further, Olech b'tzela ha'har, he's going on the mountainside and he's throwing stones, and all of the people who are with David, Mr. Pasuk, it was before, maybe. Yeah, when you say kol ba'avanim et David v'et kol avnei ha'melech David v'chol ha'am v'chol ha'giborim mino minu mismalo. He's throwing stones at David and the servants and the people and the warriors and the soldiers on the right and on the left. He's not throwing stones at one. This is not one individual throwing stones at one individual. This is all the people of Benjamin who are with him. This is quite a rebellion that he has, an insurrection that he has mounted. Here, he's just the symbol of it, Shimi ben Gera. All right, So that's part one of this discussion, is to recognize the extraordinary, why this could only really happen in the context of Shevet Binyamin's territory. Next piece of the question, which is why now? And Perek Tetzayin is a very powerful perek, precisely because it comes on the heels of Perek Tetvav. Meaning, what do I mean by that? If I go back to the previous chapter, Perek Tetvav, David is leaving Yerushalayim. And as he's leaving Yerushalayim, makes a decision midway in the parak to leave Yerushalayim. And as he begins to leave, who goes with him? Right? Avshalom and his army is on their march from Hebron to Yerushalayim to take over the kingdom. David runs for whatever reasons we've talked about. And with him, v'chol avadav ovrim al yado. And with them come the people and the army and the Kreti and the Pleti. And the 600 families from Gath show up at his door. And they say, my dear David, my dear king, we are with you. And David tries to dismiss them. And they say, like Ruth, they're going to stick with you. They're going to be loyal to you. David, the people of Gath are stand with you all the way. And then he has the Kohanim and the Aaron. And the Kohanim and the Aaron, they stand with David. And David says, you know what, take the Aaron, you take it back. And you know what? You have two sons with you. Take the sons back too to Yerushalayim. And if you need to communicate with me, they have free reign and free access. And then suddenly he hears about Achitophel and he says, oh, what am I going to do with Achitophel? And who shows up? Hushai Ha'arki, his dear friend and advisor. And he says, Hushai Ha'arki, you're in the right place at the right time. And everything about Perek Tetvav is, if there was any way to construct a more positive, more uplifting, more potential chapter with all of the pieces of the puzzle for eventually for David's return, to see David as leaving, but he's really got the loyalty of the people and the loyalty of his tribe and the loyalty of the army and the loyalty of even random tribes that are there in the countryside, loyal to David. A previous parak described the people are loyal to Avshalom. So, okay, so but David is not alone in those who proclaim their loyalty to him. That's Perek Tetvav. Perek Tetzayin, suddenly we find the contrast, almost the opposite picture. David might be alone. No, David might have all these people loyal to him, but don't think that that's everybody. There's quite an opposition to David. Here's Tziva, with all of his duplicity, and accusing Mephibosheth of waiting and sitting and waiting for the restoration of the house of Shaul, and David buys it. And then suddenly there is Shimon ben Gera and all the people of Benjamin, and they're publicly cursing David and throwing stones at him. So the contrast between Perek Tetzayin and Perek Tetvav is quite striking. And at least some of the Mepharshim, we're going to challenge this in a second, but at least some of the Mepharshim, and here you have the reference to the Malbim, suggests that all of this is taking place in response to David's proclamation to take the land from Mephibosheth and give it to Tziva. David should never have accepted the words of this Eved. The Eved who wanted to orchestrate things so that when the rebellion was over, Tziva would sit there and Tziva could have control over, Avshalom would be executed as treasonous, and David would be restored, would not be able to come back to the throne. And so in the end, Tziva said to himself, this is all going to end up with the restoration of the kingdom to Shaul. That's what Tziva's claim is in the accusation against Mephibosheth, and David should never have accepted it, should never have listened to it. Says the Malbim, Ne'enash Tekef, Shiyatsa Shimila Kalalo. The immediate punishment for David's actions in the response to Tziva was to suffer the shame of Shimi's proclamation. So the Malbim sees the two half stories of Perek Tetzayin as connected. On the one hand, David publicly commits a crime against the house of Shaul by believing Tziva that Mephibosheth is treasonous. And the punishment immediately follows in that the public shame that comes upon David is from Shimei ben Gera because of David's abuse or pain to the house of Shaul. So you kind of sense that whether that's not Shimei's intention, or Shimei doesn't even know about the proclamation about Mephibosheth, but from a divine perspective, from a providential perspective, the two events are connected. So says the Malbim. I think the Malbim is partially correct, meaning David himself sees the hand of God in this moment, right? That's what David says to Avishai ben Tzruya. Avishai wants to go and kill Shimei, and David's response is, God said to him, God let him do this. If God didn't let him do this, it wouldn't be happening. And so because God let him do this, you don't have the right to stop it. It's a very unique, very problematic perspective. We're going to talk about what that perspective means a little bit later, not today. But you understand that David saw in Shimei ben Gera some kind of divine punishment. That's clear. The question is, divine punishment for what? The Malbim says it's a punishment for his proclamation against Mephibosheth. The problem with that, I think one of the problems with that answer is that if David saw this as a punishment for his proclamation against Mephibosheth, then what should he have done? What should he have done right away? Are you still with me?
Here, correct the situation.
Right, correct the situation. Retract the. It's within David's power to retract his statement about Mephibosheth. If he saw this as a direct punishment for that action, so I think that in David's case, maybe there is a piece of it, if not consciously, at least subconsciously. But I think for David, it's much more likely that this is a direct punishment for a much bigger piece, which is the Chet of Batsheva. Meaning David is still operating under the assumption that all that is taking place here is still part of the consequences of the Chet of Batsheva. And this is all part of his onesh. Remember what the Navi had said to him. The Navi said to him in Perek Yudbet, Natan had said to him after the when he held him to task for the chet of Batsheva, Ata Ish, this is all you. And he proclaimed, Komar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, I took you as a leader. I took you from and I saved you from the house of Shaul, and I gave you the kingdom. And then he says to him, he tells him the chet, you killed Uriah and you took his wife. V'yata lo tasur cheref mi beitcha ad olam. The sword will not depart from your house, ekev kibizitani, for eternity, because you have despised me and by killing Uriah, mida keneged mida, measure for measure. Hineni mekim alecha ra'a mi betecha, I will bring an evil from within your own house against you. How can you hear these words in Perek Yudbet and not see the story of Avshalom's rebellion as a fulfillment of, if not a direct punishment, at least the consequences of his actions? This evil will come out of your house. That's precisely what he says to him. And that's what Shimei also says to him. Right? If you go back to the declaration of Shimei ben Gera, says, God has returned this blood of the house of Shaul. You are caught by your own evil. Right? This ra'a will come out of your house. Leaving aside the issue of the nashim, we'll get to that in the next parak, or the next story. But this all takes place as a kind of a punishment in David's eyes. And he's, because he accepted the consequences of his actions, he accepts upon himself the consequences of that onesh. So he doesn't fight against Avshalom, and he accepts the curses of Shimei ben Gera. And so I'm not sure that it's as much a decree or an acceptance of the as a punishment for his actions in the case of Tziva, as much as he certainly saw it as a punishment for his behavior with regards to Bathsheba. I'm going to pause for a second and take questions, because the next piece of it will take us into the actual accusation. And I just want to make sure that we've done two things so far. We've identified the long-standing pain, if you will, or tension between Yehuda and Binyamin that is represented just by the fact that David took over from Shaul, and Shaul was the hero of Binyamin. And here comes David from Shevet Yehuda once again taking over the kingdom of Shaul. And despite the fact that it had the divine approval of the Navi, or the proclamation of the Navi, there's all this long-standing complaint or concern of Shevet Binyamin that comes to a boil here and kind of spills over into this accusation. That's one piece of the story. And the other piece of the story is that this whole perek is a kind of a contrast to the hopeful, loyal reflection of those who joined David's cause in Perek Tadvav. Here you see it's not all not all are of that same perspective. And here you have a list of people who stood against David in various ways. All right. Questions? No, we're good? All right. So let's come back to Pasuk Zayin Echet, which is at the core of this discussion. What is Shimi's proclamation again, accusation against David? V'koh amar Shimi b'kalalo, tsei ish hadamim v'ish habliyah. Hashiv alech Hashem et kol dmei beit Shaul. You man of blood, you wicked man, be gone. God has paid you back now for the blood of the house of Shaul, in whose place you've reigned. Now, clearly, he is not accusing David of having killed Shaul to take the reins of the kingdom. Right? That would be an accusation that would have absolutely, I mean, it would be so far from any kind of grounding in reality that that would be pretty extraordinary. So what is he accusing David of? Tzei isha damim b'isha blial, hashiv alech Hashem et kol dmei beit Shaul asher malach tachtav, the blood of the house of Shaul in whose place you have reigned, and given the house to Avshalom your son. So let's jump into the classic Mepharshim first and see what they do with this. So, let's start with the Radak. Says the Radak, what is he accusing David of? V'yesh lomar shechashdo bidmei ishboshet ubidmei avner. He accuses him of the blood of Ishboshet and the blood of Avner. Meaning, take a step back for a second. Okay, and the Malbim makes a similar accusation. Avner, Ishboshet, a little bit of Uriah as well, we could throw in. But certainly Ishboshet and Abner. What's the problem? But what is the problem of accusing David of having the blood of Ishboshet and Abner on his hands? What is the logical problem with assuming that the accusation from Shimei ben Gera? Remember, he's got a whole following up there on the hillside. They all believe him. Is he accusing David of murdering Ishboshet? Is he accusing David of murdering Avner? Let's see. According to the Radak, it seems to be the case, right? He's accusing him of having blood on his hands. So let's go through them one by one. Who is Ishboshet and how did he die? Sefer Shmuel Bet Perek, beginning of the Sefer. Who is Ishbosheth and how did he die? Ishbosheth is the son of Shaul. After the death of Shaul, continues the reign of Beit Shaul, despite the fact that the Navi has said that David would be the next king, led by the general or encouraged by the general of Shaul's army, who stays loyal to Shaul and stands by Ishbosheth, by the name of Avner ben Ner. So those are the two key players, Ishbosheth ben Shaul, and Avner ben Ner is his general. Ishbosheth dies how? Ishbosheth dies asleep in his bed and not on the battlefield, killed by two Givonim from by the name of Rechav and Ba'ana. I won't go to the stories. It's all recorded in this early Prakim of Shmuel Bet that we studied together. So Rechav and Ba'ana go into the middle of the night. They think that David is going to reward them for their actions. And they actually, you know what? I'll show you the Psukim. After the death of Avner, we'll see that in a moment, two people come from Be'erot by the name of Rechav and Ba'ana, and Rechav and Ba'ana, v'yavol kachom ayom beit Ishboshet, they go into the house of Ishboshet, v'hu shochev et mishkav atzoraim, and he was taking a siesta, he was resting, he was sleeping in the middle of the day. They came into the house, and they killed him. They just smote him through the back. And they ran away. So who kills him? Rechav and Ba'ana. They take the house, they take the head of Ishbosheth, and they run with it to the house of to David, because they figured that David would reward him for having killed his enemies. Here's the head of Ishbosheth, your enemy, who sought your life. May God give you thus these kinds of vengeances against those who are your enemy. So David says to Rechav and Ba'ana, David had already, a little bit of a side story here as well. David takes these two individuals, Rechav and Ba'ana, and he has them executed on the spot for committing treason. Think about it for a second. David is the one who, when Shaul was chasing David, David wasn't even a king yet. When Shaul was chasing David, trying to kill David in the fields, in Shevet Yehuda, in Midbar Yehuda, in the cave, and when twice, David had the opportunity to kill Shaul, to take his life back, when Shaul was actively seeking to kill him. And he refused to do so, because he considered Shaul Mashiach Hashem, the anointed of God. Here's Rechav and Ba'ana, they come and they killed Ishbosheth, son of Shaul, and they think David's going to be happy about it. And David has him killed on the spot. There's a third person involved in that story, which he has killed as well. Not an issue for now. So is David guilty of the blood of Ishbosheth? That's absurd. Of course not. But from the eyes of the people, did they totally believe David when he said that he had nothing to do with the execution of Ishbosheth and that he wasn't happy with the murder of Ishbosheth? Did the people of Binyamin believe David at that moment? Let's leave that as a question mark. What's the other part of the story? Avner. Right? So Avner is the previous parak. Avner ben Ner is David, is Ishbosheth's general, And for whatever reason, Ishbosheth and Avner have a falling out. And Avner decides to go and change sides and declare his loyalty to David. So Ishlach Avner Malachim el David tachtav lemor, lemi eretz lemor karta britcha iti, v'hine yadi imcha le'esev elechot kol Yisrael. Make a brit, I come back to you, and we bring together all of the tribes of Israel. David agrees, he has certain stipulations, not a subject for today, and Avshalom comes to David. Sorry, and Avner comes to David. Yoav hears, he hears that Avner was with David, and Yoav is furious. And he comes to the king and he says, you had Avner for lunch? Do you understand that Avner was a spy? And that the only reason why he's here was to spy you out and to go and to tell Ishbosheth and to destroy you? Yoav turns away. Yoav goes and he has Avner and he kills Avner himself. Okay, so now Avner ben Ner has been came to David as a peace treaty, to enact a peace treaty with him. And he, as he's leaving, Yoav chases after him and kills him. What do you think the consequences are going to be for David? Here he's trying to bring the kingdom together. He's trying to unite the tribes. He's trying to appease the tribe of Benjamin. And his chief of staff goes and kills the chief of staff of Ishbosheth ben Shaul in his effort to bring the two kingdoms together. So David goes out of his way to distance himself from the murder of Avner ben Ner. Vayikonen amelech al Avner, and he laments the death of Avner. Vayomar kamot naval yamut Avner, should Avner die, and the death of a fool. His hands were not bound, his feet were not in fetters. He has a whole lament, a whole kina here for Avner. And he cries him, and he said, well, that I could have cried for, fallen for you. And they come to David. David is sitting shiva for him. And he takes a public oath. I won't eat anything because I'm distraught over the death of Avner. And as far as Yoav is concerned, I am yet this day young, and just anointed, and these sons of Tzuya, Yoav and his brothers, kashimi many, they are too difficult for me, they are harder than me, they are harsher than me, they are more extreme than me. Let God repay the evildoer according to his deeds. He makes a public proclamation, a curse in the house of Yoav. All in order to distance any association between himself and the death of Avner. So, I'm back to the question. Here's Shimon ben Gera standing on the hillside, accusing David of having murdered Yoav ben Avner ben Ner and Ishbosheth ben Shaul. David certainly had nothing to do with the death of Ishbosheth. He had the murderers executed. And the death of Avner, he publicly laments, he publicly said shiva, he certainly didn't put Yoav up to it. He makes a public curse in the house of Yoav. He can't kill Yoav for obvious reasons. But he certainly publicly distances himself from that effort. And here comes Shimon ben Gera and accuses him of the blood of Ishbosheth and Avner. Is that fair? Is that logical? Is that rational? Does anybody, David goes out of his way to distance himself from those two moments. That's the blood on his hands. That's what Shimon ben Gera accuses him of. What's the answer? You tell me, what's the answer? You tell me. How does Shimon ben Gera get away with such an accusation? Call the Beit Shaul, of the blood of Avner on your hands, the blood of Ishbosheth on your hands. Of all the accusations you're accusing me of, the two that I certainly didn't have anything to do with, and I certainly had everything to try to distance myself from, that's the accusation. What's the answer? I don't know what people are lost the unmute button. No? What's the answer? The answer is. All right, let's read it in the language of 19th century Italian commentary called by Moshe Yitzchak Ashkenazi, by Il Moshe. I just love the language. Im kol ha-torech she-torech David lehatzdik atzmo meharigat Avner, all of the effort that David went through to justify himself or to distance himself from the murder of Avner, or from the work of Rechavan Ba'anav and the murder of Ishbosheth. And he told everybody how he wasn't happy with it and that's not what he wanted, and he had the murderers executed. Mikol makom, lo ha'il latzil atzmo michshash be'enei krovei Sha'ul, shegam yado im yad ha'ratzchim. He nevertheless was unsuccessful in completely convincing the relatives, the family of Shaul, that David had nothing to do with this. Meaning, with all of David's efforts, and they were extensive, nonetheless, such is the price of leadership and power, especially in such a world, that the people of Sheva Ben Yama were not convinced. We never really dealt with the question of the consequences. Did they believe David? Did they not believe David? Maybe the rest of the tribes believed David. Maybe David was able to convince some of the people. But the rank and file of the tribe of Binyamin refused to believe David. Why? They gave every reason not to. I go back to everything we said at the beginning of the shiur. They were traumatized. You, David, you took away our king. We had Shaul. Shaul was from us. Right? Binyamin's moment in the sun. And now it's gone. And now you claim that you're innocent, that this blood on your hands has nothing to do with you, and that you distance yourself from it. Says Shimon ben Gera, nothing happened. Now, the obvious question is, the death of Shaul of Avner and the death of Ishbosheth happened, let's throw out a number, just for the sake of argument's sake. Let's say 25 years ago. Meaning, they are the events when David was in Hebron, before he comes to Yerushalayim, that lead ultimately to the end of the civil war and the combination of the two kingdoms. We're now dealing with, after David has come to Yerushalayim, he's conquered Yerushalayim, he's conquered he's defeated the Philistines, he's expanded the borders of the land of Israel, north, south, east, and west. He's created the largest empire in the kingdom of Israel. He has prepared for the groundwork of the building of the temple. He's all of these things. And we're 5 years at least after the story of Bathsheba, which means we're towards the end of David's life. So it's 25 years since the story of those two deaths. Now, suddenly, Ishbosheth comes, Shimon ben Gera comes with a complaint, files of a complaint about the behavior from David, blood on David's hands from 20 years ago. Where was Shimon ben Gera for the last 25 years? What's the answer? Where was Shimon ben Gera for the last 25 years? What's the answer?
He couldn't say anything. David was solidly enthroned.
Biding his time. Because nowhere is Shimon ben Gera going to get the time of day for his accusations in a world in which David is as powerful and as unified, and as he's fighting wars on the battlefield to protect, to expand the boundaries of all of the tribes of Israel. David in his heyday, David in his height of his power, was untouchable. And Shimon ben Gera, with all of his accusations and all of his complaints, going to put them in his back pocket and bury them deep because nobody's going to believe him. But this is a different David. This is 25 years later. This is David running from Yerushalayim. This is Avshalom claiming the kingdom. This is David running with his tail between his knee, between his legs. So now Shimon ben Gera comes along and he says, oh, you know what, David? I have an axe to grind with you from 25 years ago. You, the house of Shaul, Ishbosheth ben Shaul, his blood is on your hands. Avner ben Ner from the house of Shaul, right? Kish was a nephew. Right? His blood is on your hands. Now you're going to go what? Claim that it was all Yoab ben Tzruya? Avner ben Tzruya wants to silence him. Is anybody surprised that Avner ben Tzruya, Yoab's brother, wants to silence Shimon ben Gera? One of the big questions that I saw somebody ask, he said, where was Yoav? Why wasn't Yoav there? Why was it only why was it only Abishai ben Tzruya who wanted to defend David's honor? Where was Yoav? Right, well, part of the answer could be that part of the accusation was against Yoav. Right? It was Yoav who actually did kill Avner. So Yoav is kind of being silent in all of this. He's 25 years old, these accusations. But now they're relevant. Now they're gaining speed. Now they're gaining support because we're 25 years later. Because David is running. David is weak. It's like the rebellion of Korach. Rashi says, Ramban says that the rebellion of Korach was over issues that were long ago, that had happened when they first left Mitzrayim. But when they first left Mitzrayim, Korach was if Korach opened up his mouth against Moshe, you know what they do to him? But now in Parshas Korach, you're dealing with after Bamidbar, after the Chet Meraglim, after the Yasaf Suv, after the 30 days of eating meat and the dying with the meat between the teeth, after the sin of the spies and the decree they're going to spend 38 years in the desert, now suddenly Moshe is touchable. Now suddenly Moshe is vulnerable. And now comes Korach and he says, oh, I've got a bone to pick with you. That's Shimon ben Gera. All right. That's part two. The only thing I would add to this perspective is one additional piece, which is that there may be more even to the accusation of Shimon ben Gera. Not legitimately more, but in terms of his anger. Because what he says here is not just about the house of Shaul, about Avner and Ishbosheth, that's two people, but he refers to Kol Dmei Beit Shaul. What does Kol Dmei Beit Shaul mean? All of the blood of the house of Shaul. How many people in the house of Shaul is he talking about? Avner ben Ner and Ishbosheth, that's two. I mean, Kol Dmei Beit Shaul. So somewhere I saw the possibility, and again, it's not grounded in anything. It's not found, there's no support to it. And it's completely fictional. But it's possible also that Ishbosheth in his delusion, sorry, that Shimon ben Gera in his delusion has accused David of doing what was standard operating procedure in the world of kings at that time, which was the moment you became king, what did you do? What did every king became king in the old ancient world do when they launched the successful rebellion from one reigning power to another?
Knock off the competition.
Knock off the competition. Who wants to be there and deal with competition to his kingdom? So it was, there's at least four instances in Tanakh of somebody becoming king, and the moment he becomes king in a rebellion, in an insurrection, literally eradicating the entire household of the preceding royal family. Four such episodes in Tanakh. One, of course, the first that we have is in Shoftim, is the story of Avimelech, son of the Pilegesh of Yerubal of Gidon, and he comes to the people of Shechem and he says to the people of Shechem, I am your flesh and blood. You want me to reign over you, or do you want the 70 sons of Gidon to reign over you? And they choose Avshalom and they choose Avimelech as their king, which was a big mistake. And he takes, they pay him, and they make they give him he hires worthless, reckless people. He hires an army, a mercenary army, and they go to Ophra. And what do? They literally execute the entire royal family of Gidon, the entire house of Gidon, every single one of the 70 sons, so that only he is left, at least that he thinks. One thing you should know about the practice of kings to kill the royal family line of those who came before them, which is that you had better be successful. Because if you leave anybody out, you're in trouble. And that's what happened to Avshalom. Sorry, to Avimelech, he left out Yotam ben Yerubal, who led the counteroffensive against him, and he was done for. There are three other such instances in Tanakh. I'll show you what they are very briefly. One is not here on the source page. One is the story of Vataya. I didn't have a text because it's not in one text. It's a whole story. But Baasha, who leads a rebellion against the house of Yeravam by divine sanction, but nonetheless leads rebellion against the house of Yeravam. When he becomes king and his insurrection is complete, Vahi kimocho, he goes and he smites the entire house of Yeravam. Lo yishir kol neshama Yeravam. Not one is left. Not one. Because if you miss one, you're in trouble. Right? And that's what the house of Achav as well, later by the rebellion of Yehu, goes and he destroys all of the house of Achav. Ad bilti shil asamid. Till not one was left. Ataya's rebellion was against the house of David, and she tried to eradicate the seed of David once and for all, so she became queen or king, and she unfortunately missed one, and that was not good for her, because, as I said, if you miss one, that will come to haunt you. So there is a thought that what Shimon ben Gera accuses David here of doing is, after he comes to the throne, killing Kol Dmei Beit Shaul, of having the blood of the entire house of Shaul on his hands. Now, did David actually go and kill the house of Shaul? Of course not. It's absurd. But the notion that it's just Avner and just Ishbosheth, these kinds of rumors and accusations build up speed. And so by the time 25 years later, you know what the accusation is in the house of Binyamin, in the tribe of Binyamin? Accusation in the tribe of Binyamin is 25 years later that the blood of Ishbosheth and the blood of Avner has now become the blood of the entire house of Shaul, which is absolutely farcical and fictional. But that's the power of Lashon Hara, and that's the power of treason. It's the power of lies and the power of accusations. If you repeat the lie loud enough and long enough, people will buy it. People will buy it. And so this is the world in which David is emerging from Yerushalayim and hearing these accusations from the tribe of Binyamin, kind of the darker side of the tribe of Binyamin being uncovered and placed in David's path as he is leaving Yerushalayim. All right, we will stop here for a moment. We run out of time, so we will stop here. But I will tell you that there's one more piece to this puzzle. And the one more piece to this puzzle is that there's a third possibility for what the blood of the house of Shaul is, and that Shimon ben Gera is making reference to. And that third possibility, not so far afield. We will explore it. We will listen. We will look at it next week. That is a much more complex part of the story, and where David's guilt is not so black and white, or his innocence is not so black and white. So we'll deal with all of that, Bezrat Hashem, in the concluding shiur next week. This was all part one. And with that, I will stop, and if there are any questions, we'll take questions. Nope. If not, you've listened to me talk for an hour and 10 minutes, so I appreciate your patience and your time. And I'm going to stop the recording.